And you're listening to the HR Power Hour, and we're talking with Rich Brewer. He's the president and founder of OneWarrior1.org. That's O-N-E, Warrior, W-O-N.org. Rich, thanks for being on the show.
Thanks for having me on, Dave.
No, that's great. And now, you're a national speaker. You've been on Fox, CNN. You've been to the big times, and thank you for coming on Little Old HR Power Hour.
Oh, no, as Ray would remind me, this is the big time.
No, that's right, so. It is. You know, we're excited. We're streaming in across the country, and we've had hits on the website for over 36 states, so we're very excited about
Outstanding.
It.
I look forward to being heard.
Great. So, you know, one of the things that we talk a lot about is hiring individuals or hiring people in the HR world, and looking at businesses, hiring individuals, and a lot of people coming back from, you know, service to the country. And I do want to do a shout out quick to my dad, who sometimes listens to this show, and he's a World War II Marine.
I give him a oorah.
That's what he'll we like it. To hear, and he's great. But, you know, they're coming back from, you know, the service, and it's a challenge sometimes to get back in the workforce. And employers sometimes wonder, you know, what can they do for us? So talk to us a little bit about hiring vets.
It's an interesting and complex issue. A recent study by the New American Security Institute stated that 30% of their companies that they polled hire vets because it was the right thing to do, that it was just a good patriotic thing to do. And then 70% said they hire strictly based upon bottom line. And although veterans have interesting resumes, integrity, maturity, discipline, teamwork, leadership skills, that sort of thing, trying to translate that into what can you do for my company was one of the major concerns that these companies had. So by a large part, a majority of the companies polled liked veterans. They liked the what I call almost unteachable attributes that they have. Because I remember a few years ago, businesses were talking about how it was hard to find people with good character and moral integrity and, you know, that give back and that sort of thing.
Sure.
So now we have a plethora of that, and companies are now looking for specific skill sets. So the biggest challenge, I think, transitioning back from military to the civilian world is how do we translate military skill sets into civilian job sets? And there's been a number of websites up. H2H.jobs is one of them, where both employers and potential employees can go. And you type in your MOS, your military occupation specialty, and it comes up with translation of words that you may not have thought of to put on your resume. And it allows an employer to kind of look at that and translate that into, you know, a possible skill set they could use in their company.
I think that's important because certainly when you're talking about resume writing and you're talking about employers, whether it be HR professionals or owners, looking at resumes, resumes are that first moment that you get to look about about the person, and it talks to who that person is. And so words matter, right? I mean, words matter in terms of understanding what they can bring to the organization, because you got to get past that hurdle to then get seen.
It's usually that cover letter.
That's right.
You know, and it's a short, succinct cover letter. And most veterans don't have a problem impressing somebody on a cover letter. Hey, I mean, let's face it. Look at what they've done for this country. That's impressive. So once they get past that, then it's a matter of the companies deciding, do they have a skill set that we can use somehow, besides those intangibles of leadership and all that. And another thing is how much of a risk is an HR person or a company willing to take on a person? Let's say they have all those, you know, intangible assets of leadership and discipline and integrity and mission-driven, all that sort of stuff. And are they willing to say, okay, you know, let's take that person and let's do some OJT? They may not have the specific skill sets we need, but I bet you they're a quick learner, just based upon the fact that they can think on their feet, because that's what they've done in combat, and so that they can probably come in and learn fairly quickly. So, you know, I think it depends on how much a company's willing to risk on hiring a veteran as far as on the job training goes.
Well, you know, certainly with the economy it is today, you know, companies have limited training dollars. They want somebody, and the main reason skills are back is they want somebody who can hit the ground running, right? So you can just bang, get going, know what they're doing already. And then you have the intangible, that fit. You know, can they fit to the culture? Can they fit to the organization? Can they not do damage to my organization and come in and be, you know, someone who's an outsider and not congeal with everybody else and make it happen? So it is that challenge of if they're going to take the time to train somebody on something that they may not be fully up to speed on.
Exactly. And, you know, there's organizations out there. One of them is MOST, which is Mobile Outreach Skills Training. And it's actually the brainchild of, we all remember the show Cheers. Yeah. And I can't remember the mailman, Ratzenberger. John Ratzenberger. Mm-hmm. And he went on, and one of his shows was Made in America. He traveled for,
right.
I think, maybe
I
USA
remember that,
Network
actually.
Or something
yes.
like that.
Yes.
So what he's done now is he's retrofitted these buses and semi-trailers and that sort of stuff. And he literally would go and park. An example was Smith & Wesson in Springfield, Massachusetts. Now, they needed a certain number of people who could lathe with a certain skill set, welders, that sort of thing. They contacted MOST. He comes in and literally sets up these shops in the parking lot, brings in veterans who have already been pre-screened by Smith & Wesson, and he provides the training that they need for Smith & Wesson. So they get trained by MOST, and then they walk out of that trailer or that bus in the parking lot right back into the job of Smith & Wesson, now a trained individual.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, that's certainly a way to assist employers who are challenged in the training area on time.
And money.
And money, absolutely. And that's a key area to make sure that they are able to help and bring this person in and give them a job and get them ready to go.
It is. And again, I think there's a number of different hurdles that these people will face. And one of the biggest ones of that 70% that I talked about earlier, the company executives talked about stigma as well. The stigma of hiring a vet. And I've heard this obviously numerous times about hiring a vet who may or may not have PTSD and, you know, what's that going to look like in the workplace? And, you know, there's that stigma that's been personified by the media, Hollywood, of these people, quote unquote, you know, going off, if you will, ticking time bombs, that sort of thing. And when you ask these employers, potential employers anyway, you know, how many people on your staff are currently manic depressive? How many people suffer from chronic insomnia? I mean, they don't have a clue, yet they want to prejudge somebody, a veteran who I think has already proven themselves worthy of a job within a company. They want to prejudge based solely on a stigma. I was talking to a general recently down in Dallas who's on a job initiative there, and he goes around and talks to these company CEOs, IBM and everybody, and you know, publicly they're all given the lip service of, yes, let's hire these vets. We're going to hire 250,000 vets by the end of 2014. Let's do this. And then afterwards in the back room, you know, they'll say to the general, we're a little worried about the PTSD aspect of things. And that's basically born out of ignorance and lack of education around just what that is. So, you know, it's a hurdle, but it's one that can be easily overcome with some educational training for company executives, for HR people. They have to be educated about this new group of people that they now have available. You know, we haven't had this large number of veterans, 2.8 million, available to corporations and companies since World War II.
No, and I think the other part of it is interesting because, you know, we've had discussions with employers who have talked about the fact that it's not just men coming back now. It's also women who serve, and there is a different perception maybe of one or the other in terms of the hiring process. And that's an area that is, you know, something that has to be looked at.
Yeah, well, currently right now, the unemployment rate for a male coming back, post 9/11 male, I think the average unemployment rate's just a bit above 10%, which is a little above national average. Now, for a woman returning back, that's 21%. Unemployment rate for a woman returning from combat. The perception is that the men are the warriors, and so that the women vets, who are often side by side with their male counterparts, especially in the Muslim countries where women can't be searched by males. So they actually form these teams of women who are out on patrol with their male counterparts, helping in and assisting in searches of homes, searches of people, that sort of thing. And they're coming back, and they don't have that warrior status. And this is the time to change that perception, simply because the lines are so blurred about women's role in combat and not in combat. There's no front lines anymore.
Right.
You know?
No,
so even support personnel are literally frontline personnel.
Right. You're not just lining up and firing at opposite times.
Exactly.
It's just not the way it is anymore. So now you've gone through, you've made the decision to potentially hire a veteran. You've understood, maybe you've been educated, and you say, okay, I want to bring some on board. So what now? What's the next part of that process? You've brought them in. Tell me your thoughts on that.
Well, I think that, hiring a vet, again, is your best bet. And that's one of those catchphrases that the VA uses all the time, that famous for great PR catchphrases. But, so you hire a vet. Now, what are you going to do to get the most out of that veteran skill set besides what they bring to the job, technically, if you will? And a lot of that is going to depend on how well you understand veterans and veterans' issues. If you're a cubicle office, let's say, where you've got a bunch of cubicles and that's the way your layout is, if you have a veteran and you put them, him or her, in a middle cubby in the middle of the room with 8-foot, basic cubby walls, if you will, that's going to make them uncomfortable. And chances are they're not going to say anything because they're the new hire, right? So they're not going to make any complaints or anything. So they're going to be in the middle of this room, unable to see unless they stand up to see. And for somebody who's been in a combat theater, taking away their visual surveillance ability, if you will, is really going to decline their productivity. So you want to take something like that into account. And again, education from someone like myself, speaking to companies, HR people, floor level supervisors and managers, saying, okay, well, let's make sure that veteran has outside cubicle, so that they don't have to worry about being surrounded and not being able to see. Used to be in the day and age when everyone had a copying room, and that's where the copiers were. But now you have one printer that feeds 20 computers, and it could be located anywhere. Now, if it's located next to this veteran's desk, and it starts to go off whenever it wants to, although the veteran never pressed print because somebody 3 cubicles away did, that's going to startle them. Now, we can call that PTSD if you want, but it's not PTSD in its sense of disruption, but it's going to disrupt that veteran momentarily and take away some of his or her productivity. So there's these little nuances you can do. Depending on how big your company is, are there other veterans that you've hired from previous conflicts or peacetime? And can you get some sort of veteran support group going within your own company? Because we are a unique subset, especially combat veterans. We speak a different language. And this, if your father's a Marine from World War II, we have that lingo. So, if there's other veterans who are in your company and been there for a while, why not mentor up? Give them a mentor. And I think those little things that are really, there's no cost associated to it, will allow you to get the most out of the veteran you're hiring.
What I liked about what you're talking about is simple, basic, in some sense, common sense steps that you can take to make your office, to make your employment environment really conducive to high productivity, and using the integrity, the work ethic that comes from someone who's a veteran, and really maximizing that potential. That's what we're talking about, right? About maximizing it. And in reality, it's really no different than when you have an employee that has a challenge. And you're going to try to make their environment the best it can be so that you can get the most out of them.
And they're usually the most grateful and will work hardest for you. Now, conversely on that, and you brought that up, is these guys are coming from the military. We work basically from sunup to sundown and then usually right through the night as well. So we come into the civilian world. And, we hit the clock at 7, we punch in, whatever it is, and at 9 o'clock is the coffee break, or at 10 o'clock. These guys and girls aren't used to this. So they're much more apt to just stay at their desk, you know, especially if there's a deadline, depending on what the company's doing or whatever. And these guys, you know, they're just going to push through things, get it done. They are focused on mission and mission accomplishment. And one of the issues that has been brought up is the issue of making other workers look less productive. And so, again, with some education, HR and managers need to be made aware of that so that they can make sure that personality conflicts that may arise are truly personality conflicts and not a conflict about the fact that the new hire is making other people look bad based upon the productivity. When I was first hired on as a state trooper in Massachusetts, a young rookie, I went down to an unnamed barracks because I'm not going to name names, but I was young, on fire, ready to get going. You know, as a combat veteran, you know, I'm going to save the world. Now I'm going to save the state of Massachusetts from every criminal out there. You know, I get out there, I'm ready to rock and roll. I had a 19-year veteran of the state police take my keys one time at the start of my shift, and he said, sit down. Read a book, do something, but you'll get your keys back when I'm ready. And I was like, what are you doing? He says, you're making the rest of us look bad. You know, you're out there writing tickets. You're giving, you know, 20, 30 tickets of this. You're inspection stickers, speeding, all this good stuff. That makes the rest of us look bad. So you sit there until I give you your keys back. And, you know, as a brand new trooper, I was okay. You know what I mean? So, I mean, I think I think, again, the educational component that HR and the supervisory staff need around this issue is really what's going to help with the retention factor. Because if not, the veterans are going to just get frustrated with their fellow employees and say, this isn't a fit for me.
No,
I need to be somewhere where people are going to work, they're going to get the job done on time, and move on.
And you're listening to the HR Power Hour. We're talking to Rich Brewer. Rich, again, thank you for being on the show today. You know, we're talking about veterans and hiring vets. So now that we have them on board, we've made some of the accommodations necessary to ensure that they are productive. We've done all the paperwork. We've trained the managers. We got everybody going, and the process is moving forward. So we want to retain them now. How do we do that?
I think as long as you've taken the steps that you just spoke of, that you've made minor adjustments, and those are the ones we spoke about in the earlier segment, that you've really taken the time to bring in somebody and educate your HR and your management staff about veterans in general. And again, not the needs or anything that you need to do, but just items that you basically should be aware of when you're hiring veterans. And then after that, I think the retention, if you create that type of atmosphere that you actually care enough to make these accommodations, to bring in somebody to speak to the senior staff, if you will, on behalf of veterans. Because again, veterans, as being a new hire, aren't going to speak up too much. And veterans in general will just shut up, put up, and move on. Because that's the military mentality, is do more with little and don't complain about it.
Right.
So they'll sit there and be miserable and keep moving on and doing what they do, or they'll quit. And I think if a company creates an atmosphere that we value you, it only spreads to the other employees as well. Again, you'd mentioned it earlier. It's common sense. But we're dealing with a subset of culture here of veterans. So you say, hey, this is what we're going to do to make sure we retain veterans, whether it's a mentoring program, whether it's making sure your desk placement is where you're most productive, that sort of thing. But we're also going to make sure that we have a healthy, happy, if you will, employee atmosphere to come into every day. So the retention process is, you know, what is the ongoing training? If a veteran does need time to go to the VA, because they have an appointment at the VA to take care of stuff, many veterans, that's their health care, or if they're filing a disability claim or something like that. As a supervisor, you have to understand that they have no control over when appointments are made, how long appointments are. You have to remember that if you're here in the state of Maine, it's all the way in Augusta that they have to go to. And in many other parts of the country, when you're filing a disability claim, you can't go to one of the outlet centers that they have, like here in Portland or something. They have to go to the main hospital in order to have that done. And they have no control over that. Believe me, we wish we did. And then once there, it's the old military adage of standby to standby, hurry up and wait. So be sympathetic to that. believe me, they'd much rather be working than sitting there filing a disability claim at the VA or sitting in the doctor's office or something like that. So know that they don't always have control over those sort of things.
No, that's good information because I'm not sure employers know that. I'm not sure the employers understand that that's part of the process. You know, they may know that, hey, you made a doctor's appointment. Then why would you schedule it for that time, not knowing that they had absolutely no idea that
exactly.
they couldn't have scheduled it for any other time.
And from my own experience, they basically send you a letter with the date and time on it. And if you cannot make that, you call them back and you can reschedule. But again, the appointment will probably be 2 to 3 more months out. So most guys don't want to do that. Most girls don't want to do that. So I think it's important. And again, it's one of these things that the employers learn by bringing in somebody like myself who has that knowledge that can make these things run a little smoother when, you know, hiring a vet and then retaining the vet. And, you know, making it as positive experience as possible.
You talked a lot about doing seminars for leadership and doing seminars for senior members of the management. Is there ever a time that there should be a seminar for the whole team itself so that they understand?
Without a doubt. I think that once the leadership is on board, and I believe the leadership does indeed need to be on board, once that happens, then I think it's imperative that we bring in the coworkers as well. But we have to walk a fine line here. Veterans don't want to be treated as, you know, we're different people. That's not the case, nor do we want to be looked at as different. So when you talk about going down to the coworker level, what I would work on, if it was me giving the talk, is team building. Not so much, here's Johnny, he's the new hire and he's the vet, so we all want to be sympathetic to Johnny's needs. That's not how you want to go about it. You know, if he's a part of a team or however your company's broken down, that's when you want to start talking about team building and that sort of stuff. And again, I think that can only benefit your entire company and all your employees.
No, I agree 100%, and that makes a big difference in an organization that's willing to spend on team building and driving communication between everybody in the organization. One of the things we haven't yet talked about is some of the things that are out there in terms of the GI Bill and other, you know, financial assistance programs or employment assistance programs for employers or vets that can help match the two together. So talk to us a little bit about those.
Well, on the local level here in Maine, we've got the Portland Veterans Network right here through the Portland Chamber of Commerce that is accessible to all post 9/11 veterans. If you go onto the State of Maine website, they have the hire a vet process there. Of course, the VA has a federal link. JoiningForces.com is the White House initiative that kind of is a one resource. That's what it's meant to be. It's still kind of getting that way, but it's meant to be as kind of a one resource area. Of course, we had the tax incentives for hiring veterans that's out there. But so we have the GI Bill, which is the best we've had since World War II. So we have a lot of these guys coming out going back to college. The unfortunate part right now is that the graduation rate is between 6% and 9%. And again, it's because of that transition. Transitioning from military life to college life, I remember I got out of the Corps on a Friday, and on Monday morning I was sitting in a sociology class, and it was night and day.
Yeah, I can't imagine a more different contrast than
exactly.
those two environments.
Well, I'll give you one more. Combat veteran to classroom instead of just a veteran to classroom. Mm-hmm. That's even a much more startling difference, if you will. And so I think there needs to be a lot of work done on a college campus area to help retain veterans there as well. And again, if we're going to be training these people for jobs for the future and that sort of thing, then we must get better at retaining them on a college point in order to get them to the point where they do have the degrees that many of the HR people are looking for. On the other hand, the VA has a Volk Rehab program. So if you have 15% service-connected disability or more, you are able to go to the VA, and they have a vocational rehabilitation program where they will pay for any and all schooling that you need to be trained for an area at need, whether it's welding, mechanic, full-fledged college degrees, whatever area you may find yourself wanting, that's out there and available as well. Now, a lot of it has, especially when we talk about the government, there's red tape attached to it. I just was reading some articles about the VA being a little slow on paying schools and paying the veterans and that sort of thing. And again, I think that we, American society, we, the American government, have been slow at being ready for this. And now it's beginning to be here. We're out of Iraq. We're drawing down out of Afghanistan. And we're not ready for it. So we're still playing catch up. And this is just the tip of the iceberg. When these veterans are full force coming, and we're downsizing our military at the same time, we will have literally hundreds of thousands of veterans hitting the civilian world, looking for jobs, looking to go to college, and unfortunately, I believe, spiking the unemployment rate for veterans because we're playing catch up with it.
Sure. No, it's really a big concern in terms of the employment of great people who have done a great service to the country. And it's important to be able to bring them back into the workforce, to bring them into real life, if you want to say, from our perspective in terms of day-to-day activities. So what got you into this? I mean, you've started OneWarrior1.org, and that's O-N-E, Warrior, W-O-N.org. I want to spell it out.
That's right.
Year. So what got you into this? What got you started, and why do you do it?
Well, I'm a combat veteran from the Beirut area from the 1980s. I'm a Purple Heart recipient as well. I know what it is to fight and bleed on behalf of this country. I'm also a 28-year sufferer of PTSD, along with a myriad of other physical injuries. And 3 years ago, it almost all came to an end when I decided that it just wasn't worth fighting anymore. My facade looked wonderful. You know, I had that house in Falmouth. I had two kids and a dog and a cat and a loving wife and two cars, blah, blah, blah. But inside, it was hell. I'd been reliving that war, reliving the friends I lost, survival guilt, da-da-da-da-da, and I just wanted to end it all and just stop with the fakeness. And I almost did that. And obviously, since I'm here talking to you, I didn't. But I did profess on that point in time to do something so that others didn't reach this point. We have 18 veteran suicides a day, over 6,000 a year. 40 a day attempted. We're getting towards two active duty soldiers a day killing themselves. So I think part of it is that I have a personal mission. I've often wondered why I survived when many of my friends died. 3 years ago, I think that crystallized for me. I was meant to do what I'm doing. So this is a personal passion for me. I have this knowledge. I've enhanced my knowledge of it by studying like crazy for the last 3 years about PTSD. And now I want to make sure that other veterans don't have to lose decades of their life trying to transition back into society.
Well, this is a great program, a great service that you do to the country. Thank you for your service overall. And thank you to all the vets listening for their service. And, you know, we want to make sure that this information gets out there. So obviously everybody can go to the HRPowerHour.com and they'll be able to download the link and get your information. It'll go directly to your site and so forth so they can get this information. We encourage employers and HR professionals to look at that and hire a vet. It's your best bet will be the quote. I wrote that down. That's a good one. But I want to thank you very much today for being on the show and appreciate your time.
Well, thank you for having me.